Case 21-5736, Donetta Carr versus Louisville, Jefferson County, Kentucky, Metro Government, et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Schlosser, you may proceed for the appellant when ready.
Good morning.
Your counsel hasn't, your fellow counsel has not been able to get access to the council table yet. It's okay. You didn't know. All right, I think now you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Elliot Schlosser, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Johnetta Carr, and I ask to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. When she was just 19 years old, Ms. Carr was wrongfully convicted of a murder that she did not commit. Ms. Carr's 2008 wrongful conviction has since unraveled, as it was based upon fabricated false evidence. In 2019, Ms. Carr's conviction was set aside when she was granted a full and unconditional pardon by the governor of Kentucky. Contrary to defendants' arguments below in the briefing before this court need not consider whether the pardon included language reflecting upon Ms. Carr's innocence. As the Supreme Court instructs in Thompson v. Clark, a plaintiff is not required to demonstrate that the prosecution ended with affirmative indication of innocence.
Did we make this decision based on Kentucky law or on a federal law?
Your Honor, our position is that this is a matter of federal law. It is a federal claim. It deals with federal accrual issues. And as both the Seventh and Eighth Circuits have found in both Savory and Wilson, this is a matter of federal law. I would also respectfully submit, Your Honor, that the district court below also agreed that this should be an issue that's decided as a matter of federal law.
If you put it in that light, then I presume it follows from that it ceases to matter that under Kentucky law, a pardon would relieve an individual of the consequences of the conviction, but not wipe out the conviction itself. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that means that the question becomes more whether what has happened here is a sort of event that falls within the Heck parameter. Would that be?
Yes, Your Honor. That is consistent with our position here. We believe that as a matter of federal law, what Heck was truly concerned about, the plaintiff in Heck was incarcerated in appealing his conviction at the same time that he was pursuing Section 1980 relief, challenging the foundation of that conviction against the officers involved in the investigation. And so what Heck was really looking at were these concurrent legal proceedings, a criminal appeal, in a civil 1983 lawsuit. And what the Supreme Court Heck said is, you can't do that. There are different ways to invalidate convictions. The Supreme Court in Heck enunciated four of those. One of those could be a habeas corpus, a writ of habeas corpus, a direct appeal, state collateral proceedings. And then there's this phrase that has really been interpreted by both the Seventh Circuit, the Eighth Circuit, consistently over the years. And that is, what does it truly mean to be expunged by executive order? And as the Seventh Circuit found in Savory and the Eighth Circuit found in Wilson, an executive order would invalidate a Heck bar for purposes of allowing someone to pursue a federal civil rights lawsuit. And that's all we're really talking about here, is whether Ms. Carr's criminal prosecution is continuing or could ever continue. And the answer to that is no. And I think the case is, even looking at Kentucky law, which we Our position is this is a matter of federal law. But even under the defendant's argument that Kentucky law would somehow apply, the pardon here is far more sufficient than the other remedies available through HEC. So under Kentucky law, what Fletcher says is you can't even prosecute this person again. You can't go to a grand jury. The state court is without jurisdiction, is what Fletcher says. And certainly that type of language, even under Kentucky law, supports our invalidation argument. Because what HEC and the Supreme Court was really concerned about was, like, is there really an end to this proceeding? Or are you just challenging your current criminal conviction in a separate way when you have other avenues available? And under HEC, these other avenues enunciated, a federal writ of habeas corpus or a state collateral proceedings, they actually don't preclude criminal prosecution, right? The criminal defendant could still be retried. If the writ is granted, there's a certain amount of days to retry them. If a direct appeal is granted, prosecution could go forward. Under Kentucky law, this is the end. And that's an undisputed fact between the parties. This criminal prosecution is over. And it was over in 2019 based on a full and unconditional pardon. And looking at what we believe is most akin in terms of facts and law to this case is the en banc decision in Savory from the Seventh Circuit. That case parallels this case in every way. It was a general pardon. There was no mention of innocence. It did not grant an automatic expungement, just like Kentucky law does not grant an automatic expungement. And what the Seventh Circuit found there was that the expungement by executive order language in HEC is absolutely consistent with an executive pardon. And in Kentucky, it's undisputed between the parties. The governor doesn't have the right to expunge. So when Ms. Carr sought a pardon based on her actual innocence, that was the only basis for this pardon request, the governor gave her the fullest relief possible. A full and unconditional.
The governor did not say, though, that he was granting the pardon because of actual innocence, correct? I'm not sure it makes any difference, but he didn't, right?
You are correct, Your Honor. You are correct. The governor did not do that. And what the en banc court in Savory says is a governor would not need to do that. Because this is not about, there are lines of case law that are being conflated that deal with favorable termination for the element of a malicious prosecution lawsuit and invalidation under HEC. And they're analogous in some ways, but we would argue that the HEC bar is frankly lower than the favorable termination bar.
The governor doesn't have to put a reason when he makes a pardon, does he?
He does not, Your Honor.
Although he had a few reasons here that may not have any relevance, but anyway, he doesn't have to do it in order to expunge the record.
That's our position, Your Honor. And further here, I do think that the actual language of the pardon is open to interpretation. When the governor said that God put his hand on Ms. Carr and that she's, you know, basically going to be a beacon of light in her community, that is absolutely consistent with somebody who is innocent, who actually didn't do this.
Well, it could also be consistent with somebody who's rehabilitated and whom he believes is going to do good works. I mean, we don't know.
Fair enough, Your Honor. But I think that gets back to one of our points in the briefing, which is that we're limited here to the allegations in plaintiff's complaint. You know, the defendants below have tried to inject all this extraneous information into what is really a simple legal issue. No other circuit court in the country has ruled that a pardon does not invalidate a conviction for purposes of removing a HEC bar. And there's no real concern about a floodgates issue here. You know, that just because somebody can file a lawsuit, as this court well knows, doesn't mean that they're going to be successful. That person who got a pardon would still have to prove the constitutional torts, would have to get around qualified immunity, perhaps absolute immunity. There's a lot of things that need to be done. But just in terms of allowing a lawsuit to be on file, certainly a full and unconditional pardon, as what was given here to Ms. Carr, would satisfy the invalidation of HEC. And we would encourage this court to follow the Seventh Circuit in Savory and the Eighth Circuit in Wilson, because their logic applies here.
So at core, looking at the allegations of the complaint about 1983, everyone, there's no dispute, is there, that all of those allegations imply the invalidity of her conviction?
Yes, Your Honor. That there can't be a dispute about that because they have to be taken as true. And they were certainly pled adequately here. Mm-hmm. And I think that when this court is looking fundamentally at what happened below, the district court's opinion below was without the benefit of Thompson. You know, it was pre-Thompson. And the analysis below from the district court really tried to distinguish the facts in this case from Wilson just based upon the actual language of the pardon in Wilson. And what the Supreme Court says in Thompson is that a plaintiff need not show that the criminal prosecution ended with some affirmative indication of innocence. And if that's true to satisfy a Fourth Amendment malicious prosecution claim, it has to be true to satisfy the invalidation of a conviction for purposes of removing a head bar. This is a lower standard. And the full and unconditional pardon that Ms. Carr was granted below, we believe, satisfies the heck bar. It is consistent with expungement by an executive order, most especially in Kentucky, where the governor does not have the power to expunge himself or herself. And this executive order, this pardon, this full and unconditional pardon that was granted to Ms. Carr does enable her to seek an expungement. So it doesn't preclude that. The governor just didn't have the power to do that on his own volition. And for these reasons, we believe that the full and unconditional pardon here invalidates the conviction, removes the heck bar, and we would ask this court to reverse the lower court opinion and remand back down so that we can litigate the issues. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Mr. Irvin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, my name is Peter Irvin, and I represent the Louisville Metro government and a multitude of police officers who are alleged to have engaged in rogue conduct, all in a conspiracy to convict Ms. Carr of a crime she didn't commit when the obvious suspect was turned loose.
What's your best case that you're going to show that he's wrong?
Your Honor, my best case is that this is a question of Kentucky law.
Well, that's not a case. That's a statement of principle. Try case.
But the district Your Honor, court didn't say that, did he?
No, Your Honor. First of all, the facts as they have pleaded are immaterial. I thought it was significant.
Well, how can that, let me ask this. How can it be a question of Kentucky law, what the applicability of heck is or is not in this situation? I mean, certainly Kentucky law will affect what the impact of a pardon is, but then once you've got that factual scenario, Kentucky law, as best I can tell, has nothing to do, whatever to do, with the applicability of heck here.
Your Honor, I don't disagree with you. In fact, I think you framed it perfectly. Kentucky
That's
law,
not exactly what you said to begin with, is
well,
it?
Well, Kentucky law determines the effect of the pardon. Heck sets the standard. It's significant that in setting that standard, heck uses the word expungement by executive order. The Supreme Court of the United States knows what a pardon is. The Supreme Court of the United States knows what expungement is.
Your position is really that you think the court would not have been so specific had it intended for heck to apply in a situation such as this.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay. I think that the interesting concept when you think that it is only a handful of states that deny a governor the right to expunge, that in most of the states, the pardon operates as an expungement. So your position is that the intention of these statutory provisions was to segregate those, that small number of states when analyzing the heck issues?
I'm not sure what statutory provisions Your Honor is referring to, but I don't think that the court meant to include or eliminate anyone. But I think that the court meant what it said when it chose to use the word expungement.
Well, then, if innocence and expungement is the key here, how do you account for the other categories that Heck lists, the reversal on direct appeal and the conviction being called into question by the grant of a habeas petition, which are parallel provisions set out by Heck in its determination? Neither of those two ways require a court to base its determination on innocence, do they?
No, Your Honor, they do not.
Then why doesn't that undercut your argument that that the Kentucky governor's full and unconditional pardon does not function in Hecht because it does not declare innocence, when two of the other provisions of Hecht also do not declare innocence?
I think that Heck doesn't necessarily require a finding of innocence at all. What Heck says is the plaintiff must prove that their conviction was unlawful. Unlawful. And that's what reversal on appeal does. That's what a finding of a state tribunal that invalidates the conviction does. That's what a habeas corpus does. And that's what is required in order to obtain an expungement. Expungement requires an investigation into not only the validity of the crime, but whether the party is qualified to receive an expungement, an erasure of the conviction. And that is not what Kentucky law allows.
Well, how do you account then for the fact that we're in a complaint and the complaint allegations here that you must accept as true all undeniably speak to the invalidity of the conviction?
I stipulate that, Your Honor, and the reason is because of what Heck says. To permit this cause of action to proceed in the face of a valid conviction that has not been expunged would result in inconsistent verdicts, which is what Heck prohibits. It would permit this civil action.
I'm sorry, I'm struggling with this. Does it prevent inconsistent verdicts, or does it avoid parallel litigation and prevent collateral attacks on a conviction through a civil suit? Isn't that the whole basis?
Either way, Your Honor.
And what is the parallel litigation and collateral attack here that is ongoing? Isn't it a finalized, complete, I think he calls it unconditional pardon, unconditionally pardon her and return to her all rights and privileges of a citizen of this commonwealth? How does that partake of the reason that Heck created this rule to avoid collateral attacks and parallel litigation? That's not ongoing. This has been entered. It's done.
Yes, ma'am.
So tell me how. I don't see the thread through your argument that leads you to conclude that this isn't appropriate under Heck.
Your Honor, it's not appropriate because it may lead to an inconsistent verdict. We have a standing conviction, judgment of conviction that has not been annulled, that has not been expunged. If the plaintiff was to succeed in this civil action, which is tried under a lesser standard than the criminal conviction, it would have the effect of undoing that criminal conviction.
This was actually an Alford plea. I mean, you are not. You're not in jury conviction land here, right?
It's a conviction nonetheless, Your Honor. It's a guilty plea. It's a judgment of guilt by the court. And under Kentucky law, a pardon does not erase that guilt. It does not. And that is the question, is what is the effect of the pardon? That's what Your Honor just asked, Judge Gibson asked. What is the effect under Kentucky law? That is where Kentucky law becomes operative.
Well, I don't think the question, I mean, I understand the whole argument about Kentucky law, but I think that focusing on Kentucky law kind of obscures the more significant question of whether Heck would apply in this situation to permit the litigation to go forward.
Your Honor, I'm not sure I'm fully understanding your question.
Well, Heck doesn't, I mean, Heck has some language, right, that
yes,
you've been able to use arguably to your benefit, but it's unclear to me that Heck is intended to bar someone in Ms. Carr's situation from proceeding with her Section 1983 suit. I think it's very questionable. I think this is a hard case. Yes, there's some technical arguments on your side, but the bigger picture may not be as favorable. It's hard.
Your Honor, please, I believe that Heck was an erosion of the requirements necessary to bring an action, and they should be strictly construed. Heck applies to prohibit the inconsistent judgments, and it permits the plaintiff to prove the unlawfulness. That's the burden. Prove the unlawfulness of your conviction by either
in a habeas case, you're not proving your innocence. I mean, you may get a conviction set aside ultimately, but you're not establishing one thing about your innocence.
Your Honor, correct, but you're discrediting the conviction. And that's what's required, to prove the unlawfulness of the conviction. And here, there's been no such proof.
Well, arguably, if you want to look at the practicalities of it, Ms. Carr's situation ought possibly to be a more favorable one, particularly given the governor's statement.
Your Honor, the governor's statement didn't...
Why should her situation be less advantageous than a habeas petitioner whose conviction is ultimately set aside, but who perhaps quite clearly was guilty, or someone whose conviction was reversed, but who also was clearly guilty?
If Your Honor please, unless that reversal results in a vacation of the judgment and the plaintiffs never tried, they couldn't bring the action. Unless the action is retried after the issuance of a habeas corpus, they couldn't bring the action.
Well, there might be some further recourse to hold those people accountable for what they did, but in the moment of successful resolution of their habeas petition or the reversal of their conviction, Heck would seem to permit them to go forward with a lawsuit. And it's hard to know why they should be able to do that, but Ms. Carr should not.
Because Ms. Carr has done nothing to demonstrate the unlawfulness of her conviction. And the governor's pardon cannot vacate that judgment under Kentucky law. It does not have that effect. The pardon given to Ms. Carr says nothing.
What if the governor had said he was granting the pardon because she was innocent? The conviction would still have stood. And your argument would be exactly the same.
That is,
and yet that seems even more inequitable than the situation we currently face.
That is, you are correct, Your Honor. That is what I believe the law to be, especially in the facts of this case, where the governor made no investigation that could substantiate that conclusion. I don't believe it's impossible for the governor to do that in one business day, Your Honor.
The hard thing here, Counselor, is it's really not a question of opinions. The question is what determination this governor made. And I'm wondering if perhaps we're a little bit off base with our analysis that you're making, because what we are asking in the 1983 context is to look through to what the underlying wrong would be. And in this case, the underlying wrong is, for example, malicious prosecution is part of the claim. And in order to be able to maintain a malicious prosecution suit, the only thing you have to have is a favorable determination, a favorable termination of the litigation below. And I don't understand how in any methodology this would not qualify as that favorable termination in order to be considered as the follow-up suit and to be and to avoid the heck bar.
If Your Honor, please, the reason it is not a favorable determination is the big leap that Ms. Carr attempts to take with the Thompson decision. That case determined that a termination of the litigation before conviction satisfies the favorable termination requirement. But once a conviction occurs, the game changes. At that point, judgment of guilt is entered, and there has to be something that undoes that judgment for the plaintiff to proceed.
And so the question before this court is whether this executive order, this pardon, is sufficiently parallel to expungement or satisfies the other requirements of the law such that it's not barred by heck. You would agree with that, wouldn't you?
Your Honor, I would.
Okay.
And I would suggest that it does not in any way satisfy the otherwise requirements of expungement. I did want to...
If there are no other questions, I understand we've occupied some of your time with questioning. But that sometimes happens. If there's nothing further, I think we'll hear from your adversary in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors. One distinction one fact I'd like to bring out is that in the Eighth Circuit, the Wilson case involved an Alford plea. It was another wrongfully convicted person who was pardoned. There was an Alford plea there. And the Eighth Circuit determined that the pardon invalidated the conviction. Also there was no automatic expungement. Just like there was never automatic expungement in Savory, in the Illinois case, nor frankly in Snyder.
Were there procedural steps available to your client to obtain expungement of the conviction?
Your Honor, so under the Kentucky expungement statute, first of all, that exists today is different than what existed previously. So the pardon is a prerequisite allowing her now to seek an expungement. But only certain classes of felonies, Class D felonies in Kentucky, allow for an expungement without a pardon. And while we're on the expungement path, one thing I'd like to bring up, if the court looks at the Kentucky expungement statute, it actually does not erase the conviction, which is really the bulk of the defendant's argument. There's no eraser. You know, this conviction happened. The expungement statute actually allows the prosecutors to get the files relating to the conviction for law enforcement purposes. Like, this isn't erased. They still have the ability to use in future criminal prosecutions. The expungement statute also says, this is Section 8, that it doesn't wipe away the factual and legal conclusions that
so
led to the
conviction. She'd be in no different position, arguably, if she sought expungement.
Exactly. The pardon actually is far harder in the Commonwealth of Kentucky to get a pardon from a governor than it would be for an ordinary citizen to get an expungement from a state court. This is relief above and beyond what most people could get, and especially in the circumstances here, where it's a full and unconditional pardon. There's no limitations to this. One thing I'd like to bring out is that, and as the court recognized, Judge Strange, in your questioning to counsel, is that, like, what Heck is really concerned about is, are these parallel litigations. That's what's going on here. It is undisputed. Nobody disputes that Ms. Carr can her criminal prosecution is over forever.
Could the governor put the words additionally on there? She is also, her crimes are expunged.
You're right.
Or is that not a legal part of the document if you put it in there?
Yes, Your Honor. Our review of the Kentucky Constitution does not give the governor the power to automatically expunge somebody's record. It does give the governor of Kentucky the power to pardon or commute sentences. And here, the governor gave a full and unconditional pardon. And we believe, you know, consistent with the meaning of Heck and what Heck was really about is preventing collateral, you know, litigation. And also consistent with the logical reasoning expressed in Savory in the Seventh Circuit and Wilson in the Eighth Circuit, we would encourage this court to follow that precedent and lead to the right result, which is that in full and unconditional pardon invalidates a conviction for purposes of removing a Heck bar. Thank you, Your Honor, for consideration of the issues.
We appreciate the argument both of you have given in this interesting and, I think, somewhat difficult case. Thank you very much.